Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Viola was very popular. She was very, I don't know, everybody liked her. And she was fearless.
There are so many things that we should know that we don't. And that's really frustrating. They treated her as if she had just abandoned her kids, whereas in reality, we now know she went missing.
Missing persons cases are never easy. Some, however, seem to be almost impossible to figure out. There are so many missing pieces to the story, and more often than not, we are left with just questions and very few answers. This appears to be the way the story was going for Viola Finley. Viola, a 28-year-old mother of three, was visiting family in Florida in September of 1983. After her visit, it's believed and assumed that she was making her way back home to her children in Waterloo, Iowa. However, Viola never made it there. The point in which Viola went missing is a mystery, and theories run abound. Proper steps were not taken when Viola went missing, and the family has been hard-pressed to get answers. There has never been a proper search. Documentation of certain events in Viola's life has been lost due to natural disasters, and those who would have memories that could lead authorities in the right direction have either left this world or simply can't clearly recall the events. So what happened to Viola Finley in 1983? Did she ever make it out of Florida? Did something happen along her trip to Iowa? Or is there a piece to all of this that has yet to be uncovered? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 250 of The Vanished, Viola Finley's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. For this story, we wanted to gain a better understanding of who Viola was as a person. Thankfully, we were able to speak with her sister, Betty. Betty told us about Viola's younger years. Early on in our conversation, we gathered that Viola had a bit of a wild streak. She liked to have fun, but was also known to be responsible. She was a caretaker in her family, a trait that would carry on when she had her own children when she was older.
Well, she was kind of a wild child. She got into drugs and all that stuff at an early age. Well, she pretty much took care of us, the other three of us. My mom had started to work, so she was like our second mom. But it wasn't until she was about 13 before she started getting into the crazy stuff with the drugs and drinking and stuff like that. Then she dropped out of school. And when she came back, we were both together in 10th grade for a while. She ran away a lot. But, I mean, growing up, I was like 17 months old, younger than her. And she was very mature for her age, as far as, you know, physically. But she just had an addictive personality and just got into all the drugs and stuff.
Betty continued on and told us about Viola when she was an adult. Things like she never wound up graduating high school, and that she became pregnant with her first child, a baby girl she named after her mother, Phyllis, and that she ended up giving her the nickname of Buffy. During this time, Betty got married and was in the military, so she wasn't around Viola as much as before. This didn't stop her from communicating with her sister. Betty told us more about the type of mother Viola was.
She was a good mother to her, but she never really settled down. So her and Buffy had kind of a transient life. And after that, what I know is she got pregnant with her middle child, Vicky, and she had met this guy, Kelly, down here in D-Land, and they moved to Minnesota together.
Kelly Hodge, Viola's boyfriend, played an important role in her life, and not necessarily in a positive way. In the beginning, things seemed to be going well with Viola and Kelly. He took Viola's kids as his own, and they ended up having a son together. But things eventually turned sour, and Kelly was allegedly abusive to Viola. The pair ended up going their separate ways. We asked Betty if she could tell us about the last time she saw Viola.
My husband got transferred to Jacksonville, Florida, from Waterloo, Iowa. And she lived in Waterloo. And I came down to visit with my aunt. I was visiting with her, and my sister showed up. She came to Daytona. And when she came up here to see me, because I didn't even know she was here, she came up with these people that were, I guess, friends of hers from Daytona, from way back. And she wanted to know if she could borrow $20 so she could get a bus ride back to Iowa. And at the time, I didn't have $20 to give her. I had like 10, so I gave her my $10. And she told me she had bought a friend down here from up in Waterloo who was in an abusive relationship, and that she was brought her down here to stay with some of her friends down here. But whoever brought her down here, which I never did find out who it was, they evidently got in an argument. Viola, I guess, wasn't with them when they came up here. Anyway, she told me that she was going to get on a bus and go back to Waterloo. And that's the last time I heard from her or talked to her. My brother said that she came to see them in Daytona, but I don't know if it was before or after she came to see me.
Unfortunately, Viola's brother has since passed away, so we are unable to verify if it was before or after she saw Betty. Betty, like every family member in such a situation, had no idea that those moments with Viola would be the last time she would see her sister. Betty told us about when and how she found out that Viola was missing.
One day I'm sitting at my aunt's house, and there's this phone call. And it was from, I guess, the people that were babysitting my nieces and nephew. Hey, do you know where Viola is? I said, well, no, she left here a while back to go home. And it was about 10 days after she had left. She said, well, she's not back yet. We had to put Willie in the hospital because he got pneumonia, and now the state has him. I'm like, okay. So I waited for my mom to get back, and I don't remember how many days that was, and I called and told her. So she called and filed a missing persons report with Daytona, and I don't know what they did, but mom gave them all the information because she was living there in Daytona at the time, and then she moved up here next to where my aunt lived in 84. So she got a phone call from a detective about 3 years after she filed the missing persons report and asked my mom if she'd ever heard from Viola. And my mom told him no. And my mom had gotten custody of the three kids in that time. Well, in 1996, my husband and I were going to adopt my middle niece, Vicky. My mom had filed for a death certificate to get the whatever Social Security money that my sister had earned for kids. They did a presumptuous death certificate because, you know, there's no body, nobody's seen her.
It appears as though a report that Viola was missing was filed, But beyond that, not much was done to try and locate her. What would later come out is that people who knew Viola or heard about this case just assumed she left and never came back. However, those who truly knew Viola and loved her knew in their hearts that she never would have left her three children. Betty told us that around 2009, the cold case unit in Flagler County, Florida reached out to her because they had found some human remains and were curious if she, along with Viola's living children, would be willing to submit their DNA into NamUs on the off chance that this Jane Doe was Viola. The Jane Doe turned out to not be her, but this prompted Betty to contact the Daytona Cold Case Unit. When she spoke to the detective there, she learned that Viola, who had previously been listed in NamUs, had been removed due to the fact that the initial missing persons report regarding Viola's disappearance had been stored and unfortunately destroyed in a flood.
I finally found somebody to get a hold of in the Daytona Beach Police Department with their cold case. They only have one detective that works it, and his name is Detective DiNardi. Then I found out they took my sister's case off of NamUs because I don't actually have a police report, because the one that was taken in back in 83, they had stored it after they saw the presumptuous death certificate, which was over 10 years later. So then it was destroyed somehow. They said the records room had flooded and that was destroyed. But Detective DiNardi said he would, you know, try to look for it. And in the meantime, I called the Waterloo Police Department and asked them if they had ever, you know, done a missing persons on my sister, because that's where she was living at the time. So evidently the state didn't file one. Nobody filed one up there. Tried to keep the Doe Network, the Iowa network up there, apprised of anything I've done or any information I could give them. And what all Amanda has done for me, she's been tremendous.
The Amanda that Betty is referring to is a woman who reached out to Viola's family after reading about her case online. In the last few years, Amanda has been a wonderful help and support to try and propel Viola's case into the public's eye. Learning that Viola's file was destroyed in a flood was devastating news for her case. She's been missing for more than 37 years. The memories of those still alive today have slowly become foggy with the passage of time. A lot of the information given to the police back in 1983, including important dates and any potential witness interviews, are now lost, which has made it difficult to piece together what clues remain. We asked Betty some questions regarding Viola's disappearance. For instance, how are they so sure that she never returned back to Waterloo?
The people that were taking care of her, my nieces and nephew, they called me up and asked me where she was. I don't know where they got my aunt's phone number from, but I'm assuming it was from an address book that my sister had. That's the only thing I could figure out. When we went to pick the kids up in Iowa from foster care to bring them home, the place that she lived, all my sister's things were laying out in the yard, in the front yard or side yard. I don't remember which. And as we were going through it, the only thing we found that we knew for sure was my sister's was her address book, which I don't know what my mother did with. That's how we found out was that she just never made it back home. I waited for my mom to get home, which I don't think it was too many days after, to ask her if she had heard from Viola. And that I said, well, Mom, they called me and told me that she never made it back to Iowa. And I told her about, you know, she was down here and what she was doing down here. I said, well, I talked to her the day she was here, but that was like a couple weeks ago. And she said, oh, well, where are the kids? I said, Mom, I don't know. The last I heard, Willie was in the hospital. I don't know where the girls are.
Betty told us what she thinks happened to her sister back in 1983.
I think that she never got on that bus. I think she decided to hitchhike back because she used to do that a lot. That just hit my brain. She used to hitchhike a whole lot. So I'm thinking maybe she was hitchhiking. Maybe she got hit by a car and thrown off into some woods. Maybe she was one detective I talked to. You know, that's about the time this serial killer was around. Your sister fits a profile. But, you know, they never followed up on any of that. I have never really had any police department follow up on any of my phone calls except for Detective Dianardi and that one guy in Waterloo.
We can't be certain which serial killer the detective was referring to while speaking to Betty, but it's fairly safe to assume that they were speaking about Samuel Little. Little is a notorious serial killer whose crimes span several decades and multiple states across the U.S. He has confessed to 93 murders between 1970 and 2005. Many of his murders were in Florida, the state where Viola disappeared. So far, the FBI has been able to confirm 50 of his confessed killings, matching up his confessions to murder victims across the country. Little also draws portraits of the women from memory to help investigators solve these cases. Samuel Little often preyed upon vulnerable women in society, like sex workers, drug users, runaways, and hitchhikers. And Betty told us that Viola was known to hitchhike. Plus, we also know that she was struggling to pull together the funds for a bus ride home. My friends over at The Fall Line, a podcast dedicated to unsolved cases in the Southeast, just so happened to be currently working on a podcast series about Little. I contacted them to compare notes on Little's whereabouts in September and October of 1983 with what we know about Viola's disappearance. What I learned was that Little was extradited from Mississippi to Florida during the summer of 1983. For a murder that was committed in Gainesville, Florida in 1982. He stood trial in January of 84 and was acquitted of that murder. So there's a gap of time between his extradition in the summer of 83 and the trial in 1984. It was during this time frame that Viola disappeared. One key piece of information that we weren't able to nail down for sure is if Little was incarcerated after he was extradited, or if he could have been out on bond during the time before his trial began. With the murder charge being such a serious offense, it's likely that he was incarcerated, but we just aren't sure. Another thing we looked at was Little's confessions and the portraits he drew of his victims. At this point in his life, Little seems very forthcoming about his crimes. There are no unmatched confessions for any murders in Florida in 1983. Although we can't say for certain that he didn't harm Viola, it seems like an unlikely theory in this case. However, Little wasn't the only predator roaming the country during that era, harming hitchhikers and other vulnerable members of society. The theory that she was harmed by a stranger who offered her a ride somewhere between Daytona and Waterloo still remains a distinct possibility. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. After Viola disappeared, her children ended up spending some time in foster care, while things with custody were getting sorted out. Years after her mother's disappearance, Vicky, Viola's middle child, tragically died in a car accident at just 15 years old, leaving just Betty, Buffy, and Will to try and piece things together. Buffy was around 7 years old when her mother disappeared, and Will was just one. The memories the two of them have are hazy at best. We were not able to speak with Will for this story. However, we had the opportunity to speak with Viola's eldest child, Buffy. She told us about her mother and what little she can remember about the time surrounding her mom's disappearance. Buffy, who was a young child at the time, has very few memories as to what happened, so much so that for years she didn't even know that her mother was missing.
I really didn't know until after my grandparents and my aunt all came and got us from up there. That's when I realized something kind of was off. They really didn't say anything right then and there. I think a few years later when I started asking questions is when they finally told me. So I was probably a little older when I started asking questions. And then that's when they finally told me what was wrong and how she had been missing.
Actually, Buffy wasn't aware of all of the details of her mother's disappearance up until recently. All she really knew was that her mother was gone. But the passing of her grandmother got family members talking more in depth about Viola.
She went missing, coming down to Florida. It wasn't until later that I got some more of the details that she had come down. I guess it was probably a couple of years ago. I was sitting there talking to my aunt. And it was recently after my grandma had passed, and we were sitting there talking about her, and she told me that she had gone missing, coming down here to help a friend out, and she never made it back up to Waterloo, and the last thing my aunt remembered was her going to the bus station, and she told my aunt that she was going to get back to us no matter what, and she never showed up.
Given that she has so few memories of that time in her life, we asked Buffy if she had any theories as to what happened to her mother back in 1983.
I don't feel that she's gone, but I can't be, 100% because they never, from what I understand, they never found a body. So I just think that there's two scenarios that I think. One, she got involved with the wrong people back when she was hanging out here when she was younger, and either A, they got rid of her, or B, she threatened her family. So, but that's just my theory, is I can't be 100%.
Buffy may not have any concrete answers as to what happened to her mother, and unfortunately, this leaves Buffy and her family with a slew of questions.
I've heard stories about my mom growing up being, with some rough people, like, bikers and stuff like that. But I can't really honestly say anything because I'm not sure, with us constantly moving, it kind of puts it in your head that was we running from somebody or something? Why didn't my mom stay in Florida? Why did we have to move all the way across country to live somewhere quiet? And then all of a sudden she comes back home and she never makes it back.
Earlier in this episode, you heard Betty mention Amanda. We were lucky enough to speak with Amanda, and she told us how she became interested in Viola's case.
I met Betty back in 2016 online. I just came across a post, but I have family in Daytona and I have a lot of roots in Daytona. And so it really piqued my interest. And so that's how I started. We just started communicating and I found out how little help she has gotten, honestly, since 1983. And I thought, she needs someone to really, who's not necessarily emotionally attached, even though I have become very close to the family. You know, I can separate myself. And that's something that, you know, she and Buffy are, you know, they have a hard time doing because it's very emotional. It's very hard for them. So I've kind of been a good third party to kind of help navigate through things and talk to people. And it's helped, you know, and given more perspective on other things.
Amanda has been able to suggest to the family many different facets and avenues to help Viola's case get traction.
There have been so many things that I've been like, well, have you tried this? And they're like, oh, we never thought of that because they didn't have any help. And if you're not in this mindset of doing this type of thing, you know, you're not going to think of those type of things. So there have been quite a few things that we've uncovered and that, you know, are still uncovering. So they have a lot of hope.
While speaking with Amanda, we asked her if she could break down the details of the case for us.
Sometime in mid-September of 1983, Viola and an unknown friend went to Daytona Beach in the friend's car. Viola did not have a vehicle. She was helping this friend to get away from an abusive relationship. Viola was from Daytona. I'm not necessarily sure if the friend picked Daytona or if she did, or I don't know, you know, why Daytona was chosen, but that's where they went. Viola hadn't been back to Daytona since she moved away from there in 1980. So this had been 3 years. At that time, in 1980, she moved with her fiance, Kelly Hodges, to Brewton, Minnesota, where she had her daughter, Vicky, and then her and Kelly had a child together named Will. And then sometime around January or early 1983, I'm not entirely sure when, Viola and Kelly broke up and her and her three children moved to Waterloo. And they ended up renting a duplex at 1707 Blackhawk Street. I'm not exactly sure when they moved in. I know she was at a women's shelter for a short time, but I know they were there in beginning of August of 83 at Blackhawk Street because I found a newspaper entry where Buffy, her oldest child, actually was in a very small car accident. She was riding her bike in front of the house and a car bumped her and she was fine. She wasn't taken to the hospital or anything. It wasn't that bad, but it made the news and, you know, obviously freaked Viola out really bad. And Buffy actually remembers that happening. So I know they were there then. Then Viola made a report about a burglary on September 6th of 1983 at that house. Some money was stolen. And that is the last legal documentation that we have. So that's why you see that date of September 6th as her last known, last seen or missing. But really, it was actually more towards the end of September. But we just don't know when she left on that trip. And we don't know when she was supposed to come back.
To add to the confusion, Viola's official disappearance date was marked down as September 6th, September 22nd, September 30th, and sometimes as late as October.
Betty just had this memory pop up where her mom, Betty and Viola's mom, her name's Phyllis, she used the date of September 30th for the presumptive death certificate date of 1988. So she did 5 years after, and she thinks that she just happened to remember that September the 30th was a day that was very important. So it was either the day that she was last seen or it might have been the day that she was leaving Daytona. But I feel very confident in saying that the 30th of September is much more probable of a date than the 6th of September. And she actually, I had Betty go back through and look at her stuff because I wanted a copy of the death certificate. And so she found that. And then I guess, I don't know, she just looked at it and she thought, oh my God, I remember. There is a reason that her mom made the death date, the death certificate date, the 30th of September. And she wasn't sure if it was the day that they got the phone call from the people who were watching the kids in Iowa, or if that was the day that her mom found out about it. Because her mom and her stepdad were not in Florida when it happened.
Amanda told us some other types of research she's done for this case to try to uncover some needle in the haystack that may lead to some sort of clue as to what happened to Viola.
When Viola left on her trip to Daytona, she left her children in the care of a couple and their young two children. Buffy thinks, and I'm going off a seven-year-old's memory here, you know, Buffy was seven in 1983, and I mean, that was a traumatic time for her. So So these memories are, we have to be very careful with them because they're not, she was seven, her mom, you know, all this happened. So she thinks that one of those children that was babysitting them was a classmate of hers at Lowell Elementary, where she was a first grade student. And because of this, I have tried so hard to track down all of the first graders that were at Lowell in 1983. It's not been easy. I've found maybe six people so far out of, you know, if we can assume maybe there were like, I don't know what the class sizes were like back then, but maybe there was like 15 in a class, maybe. And I know there were three first grade teachers. So that roughly 45 people. And I have tried, and they do have class rosters that they did. They didn't do yearbooks, but they had class photos, I guess, if you will. And I can find no one that, none of the six or so people that I've found so far has their class photo from those years. And I've even found one of the three first grade teachers that were there in 83. There's only one still alive, and she does not have her records from that year. She has maybe like before and after, but she doesn't have that year, which again is very frustrating. But I've met some incredible people, and they have really tried to help me. And it's been really, it's amazing finding people that will help you, that don't know you and don't know Viola and don't know anything about it, but they still, you know, go through their storage lockers. And one thing that's always bothered me that I cannot figure out, Buffy told me that around, would have been the beginning of, or the end of the school year for her, for kindergarten, they had just gotten there recently to Waterloo. And she befriended this boy, and she thinks this is the same boy that families ended up babysitting her and her siblings whenever Viola went to Daytona that time in September. And she walked to this boy's house after school from Lowell, and instead of going straight home, well, Viola flipped out and called the police. She was like, "Where's my kid?" Well, the little boy's parents said, "We need to take you home. You know, where do you live?" I guess, I don't know if they came home from work or what happened. They took Buffy home to Viola. And that's how Viola and the parents became friends. And Waterloo is amazing for their records. They put every single fire alarm theft, if you sneezed, it was in the paper back then, which is amazing. It's a gold mine. And I have searched and searched and searched, and I cannot find that instance. And I feel like that, because Buffy remembers that there were cops everywhere when she got to her house. Viola had called the cops and she was freaking out. And I feel like something like that, even though it was resolved, stuff like that was still in the newspaper, and I can't find it anywhere. And I'm wondering if it wasn't at the Blackhawk address that happened. I actually just asked Buffy earlier, because it kind of like came to me that maybe this happened when they were living wherever it was they were living before they moved into the duplex. And so I'm going to go scour the newspaper articles some more, but, and to see if maybe, because I was looking for this incident having to do with Blackhawk Street, because they put the addresses on. They don't always put the names, but they put addresses in these entries in these old newspapers.
Amanda was also able to track down a social worker in Iowa who was familiar with Viola's case, and she inquired as to why no one thought to reach out to the police in Waterloo to file a missing persons report there.
She had no family in Waterloo, therefore there was nobody to report her missing. And I asked the social worker, he actually remembered this case because he thought it was so odd, because there was never any indication that Viola would have left her kids. She was doing everything she could as a single mom. So he thought that was very odd. And I asked him point blank, I said, "Why didn't you guys contact the police? Why was she just automatically treated as someone who abandoned her kids? They all but put out a warrant for her arrest for abandoning her kids." I mean, it just blew my mind. In reality, we now know she went missing. I asked a social worker, when I spoke to him on the phone, I said, "Why didn't you guys report her as missing?" And he said that wasn't their protocol. I don't know. I know she had a boyfriend there in Waterloo, and I know she had friends, but I've not been able to find them. And I'm hoping that the right people will hear this and come forward saying they knew her. A missing persons report was made in Daytona, where her mom lived, Viola's mom lived, it was a few weeks later. Because back then, they didn't have cell phones. Viola didn't have a car. Viola didn't have a home phone. Even she communicated through letters. The family shared a few of those letters with me. And just reading them, I mean, you know, she would have never left. And I fully believe that with all of my heart. And it's just, she just literally disappeared off the face of the earth.
One part of this mystery is why Viola was in Florida. Apparently, she was trying to help a friend. We asked Amanda if she could provide any information about the woman that Viola was helping while in Daytona.
I know she was very sympathetic to abused women because she herself had had some issues with that in the past, and I'm not sure with who. I wouldn't want to even say because I don't know who it was, or, you know, if it was a boyfriend, or I don't know. But I know she wanted to help people. That was her big in her life. She wanted to help people. She was living in a women's shelter before she moved into the duplex at Blackhawk Street. And I don't know, maybe if she, this is where she met that friend that she helped move to Daytona Beach. All those records are going to be sealed. I mean, nobody's going to talk to me. You know, I'll never find this person that way. But I would think that that's probably how she found this person, and that's who she helped to move to Daytona. That's the story that she told Betty. And I mean, we have no reason really to not believe it. And so she was there. At some point, her and this friend got into an argument, and they parted ways. At that point, we don't know who was helping her. We don't know who she was getting rides from. We don't know where she was staying. We have no idea. But at one point, she showed up in a car that Betty did not recognize and asked for bus fare so she could head back to her kids. So Betty gave her some money. She said she was going to take the Greyhound back to Waterloo. And so that's what she did. She gave her some money, and that was the last time anybody saw her. And then 10 days later, the babysitter that had the children called Betty's house. So obviously, Viola had left that number with them, saying, you know, this is who you can contact if you need to reach me. And so they called and said, when are you going to be back? Will, who was just 1 year old, he was a baby, he had really bad pneumonia, and they needed to take him to the hospital, and he needed to see a doctor. They're like, when is Viola coming back? Betty said, you know, she left 10 days ago. She should be there. And that's when everything started happening. And when we started really learning that, okay, something's wrong.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Amanda told us about her current theory on Viola's case.
I don't think she ever left Daytona. I think she met up with the wrong person and she's still there. And she's dead. I mean, there's no doubt. She would have never left her kids. I've read, you know, words straight from Viola's mouth in these letters. And I have talked to many, many friends and family. And that is the one thing across the board. If there's anything, you know, that people know, it's she would never have left her kids. And certainly after Vicky passed away in 1996, if for whatever reason she had, she would have came back at that point. I mean, there's no way. I don't think she ever left Daytona, and I do not think she's alive. And that is pretty much the general consensus of what everyone thinks, her family and friends.
Amanda does not believe that drugs were a factor in Viola's disappearance, given what she's uncovered about Viola in letters exchanged between family, and also what friends and relatives have stated about Viola during that time. Even though she may have been wild in her younger years, it doesn't appear that she was involved with drugs at this point in her life. Amanda explained why she believes that Viola met with foul play.
You know, for a long time, I thought drugs. But as far as I can tell, she was clean. After I got these letters, it really changed my mind and it changed my thinking. Viola does talk about how she says, I've moved to a great little town called Melrose. I no longer take drugs or drink, and I've had therapy to understand and like myself. It may be cold here, but it is a great place to raise a family. There is no big drug problem in the community, and the only crime here is the occasional B&E. I try to stay away from these kind of people and will take the cold place and contentment anytime. And that was December of 1981. Same letter, she says, I have two children now. The oldest is 5, named Phyllis and Viola, which is Buffy. And the youngest is 11 and a half months and named Shelley Victoria Brooke. It seems your brother and I both like the name. I am expecting again in May. If it's a boy, his name will be William Andrew Kenneth after Papa, Dad, and your father. Then she goes on to say, I am not married yet, but plan to be soon. It might seem like I'm doing things backwards, but I love my children dearly, and they mean more to me than people's acceptance. The guy I'm going to marry is named Kelly, and we are happy together. I'm glad I waited for him. He came from a bad home life, but between us, we now have a good home for our family. At age 26, I'm starting to get it together. There was a person who is very close to the person that I believe killed Viola, and she made a remark one night when she was drunk that her brother had killed Viola and buried Viola on that property.
This theory may seem to come out of left field, but given the nature of this case and its severe lack of evidence or information, is it really so far off to think that this could have happened to Viola? Amanda told us more.
There is a car that is buried on that property. Multiple people have seen it. At the time, it was buried with the roof like at ground level. And I think over time it sunk, so I don't think you can tell. And it was buried around that time. And Will and Buffy used to play on the top of that car when they were little. And that gives me goosebumps and it makes me want to throw up, because there's a very good chance that their mom is buried in that car. Now, there's no way to know, obviously, unless the car's dug up, which is a goal of mine. However, I had planned on going out there this summer, and then COVID hit and I couldn't. And Betty's ready to go knock on this person's door and say, can we look around your property? Because the family that made this admission doesn't own that piece of property anymore. They still live next door, but they sold off that portion of the property. So it's no longer there. So just a renter is living there.
So what makes this a viable theory? At the time that Viola was in Daytona, she made a comment to her sister Betty about her mom not being home. In September of 1983, Viola's mother and stepfather were in Alaska on a trip. The only way in which Viola would have known about this is if she went to the property where the car is allegedly buried. This property is where Viola's mother was living at the time. and it's been theorized that Viola spoke with a man on this property and something later transpired between them that ended in Viola's death. This information has been given to the detective that has Viola's cold case, but according to Amanda, he has stated that probable cause would be needed to search the property. The legal roadblocks of something like this can be frustrating, but hopefully something can be done to give this family some much-needed answers. Amanda has been working so hard with Viola's family. In a case that is riddled with so much tragedy and darkness, there is still a flicker of hope that one day some more information will come to light.
Where it stands right now is I have no idea if anything is even being done on it. I do not think anything's done. And here's the thing, like, okay, a lot of cold cases, all these leads have been worked on and all these people have been talked to. Well, here, nothing. Nobody was talked to. No questions were asked. There are answers out there. I had Buffy, Viola's oldest daughter, get her records from the juvenile court in Black Hawk County, Waterloo, and we got new information that could have easily been gotten back then, but nobody bothered to get it because they just treated her as, oh, she just ran off, you know, she's gone, whatever. So there are answers out there that, and they may not be 100%, you know, to solve the case, but there are answers out there. There are people who know that could still be in Waterloo, probably that have useful information, and they may just not realize it. And that's why I'm hopeful. Nothing's been done. Literally nothing's been done trying to find her. And it's really, really sad because her kids have had a very tough life. She only has two living kids now. Her daughter died. The middle daughter, she died when she was 15 in a car accident. And Buffy and Will have had tough lives and they lost their mom at a very young age. And it's a tragedy because Viola was a great mom and she wanted the world for her kids.
Amanda has been working to track down anyone who knew Viola to see if they could have any valuable information to help this case. There is one friend of Viola's that she's been trying to find, but hasn't had any luck yet. But you just never know who might be listening.
Before she moved to Waterloo, she was only in Waterloo for a few months. So as far as, I think that's why I'm having a hard time finding people that remember her in Waterloo because she just wasn't there for that long. But before that, she lived in Melrose, Minnesota, and that's where I have her letters from that she corresponded to with her cousin. And she talks about a very good friend named Larry. She never gives a last name, but he lives somewhere in the Melrose area. And I would love to find him because I think it's possible that she kept up with him after she left Melrose and went to Waterloo. And if so, maybe there's a name of a friend in Waterloo that's in those letters. I'm not sure. I've tried to find him and I haven't had any luck. He was 19 in 1982. It says he was at that time, boyfriend, fiance, his name was Kelly Hodge. He's Will's father. He's deceased now. He was their best friend, is what she had said. And all she said was his name was Larry. And I would love to find him. He may not even realize that he knows something valuable, but he may lead me to somebody who knows something.
So what happened to Viola Finley back in September of 1983, after she made the trip from Waterloo, Iowa to Daytona Beach, Florida, to help a friend escape an abusive relationship? This is a case with very few clues to go on. We do know from her sister Betty that Viola and her friend parted ways after some kind of argument. During Viola's visit with Betty, she said that she planned to take a bus back to Waterloo and asked for some money, but Betty didn't have quite enough cash to cover the bus ticket. Betty was unsure who Viola was staying with, and remembered her showing up that day in a vehicle she didn't recognize. But Betty didn't think much of it. She didn't expect this to be the last time she would ever see her sister. Since Viola grew up in the Daytona area, it's likely that she had friends there, and she could have been staying with friends and getting rides from them. We don't know if Viola ever purchased a bus ticket or even made it out of Florida. Betty mentioned that Viola was known to hitchhike, so that is one theory in this case, that Viola got into a car with a stranger while attempting to return to her kids in Waterloo, and was harmed by that stranger. She also could have been harmed by someone she knew and trusted in Daytona, possibly an old friend. Then, we have this theory about a man who was living on the same property that Viola's mom was living on at the time. When Viola visited, her mom was in Alaska, but she wouldn't have known that unless she stopped over to see her mom and found out about the trip. Did she have a run-in with this guy? Someone close to him later told a story about him killing Viola and burying her in a car on that property. And we know that there was a car buried there around that time. This lead has never been investigated as far as we can tell. It would be interesting if law enforcement could dig up that car sometime in the future. Even with this new information that's been uncovered in recent years, it still doesn't seem like law enforcement has done much work on this case. It has been passed around through various jurisdictions, and none of them seem to have much interest in investigating this very cold case. I did submit a record request to the Daytona Beach Police Department, as they are the ones currently listed as the investigative agency. Their public information officer responded, "Hi, I just wanted to get back with you about your request regarding Viola Finley. Unfortunately, we don't have any records on file for that case. We can't even confirm at this point if it's a case we worked on. Any records we had were lost in a flood many years ago. Our current database goes back to 1989, and this was a 1983 case. For that reason, we'll also decline the interview request." Even with law enforcement's lack of interest in the case, Viola's family and Amanda are determined to keep pressing for answers. At the time of her disappearance, Viola Finley was 28 years old. She stood at about 5'6" tall and weighed somewhere between 170 and 200 pounds. She had brown, shoulder-length hair and brown eyes. One distinguishing feature that Viola had was that she had a broken front tooth. If you have any information about the disappearance of Viola Finley, please contact the Daytona Beach Police Department at 386-671-5100 or the Flagler County Sheriff's Office at 386-437-4116. If you'd like to follow Viola's case on Facebook, there's a group called Finding Viola Marie Finley.
They treated Viola's family as if Viola was just some woman who abandoned her kids and wanted to go live her own life. And yes, Viola was a free spirit. She was. I mean, I didn't know her, but everyone that I have talked to, and I have talked to a lot of people that knew her, from the time she was in grade school until a couple years before she disappeared, and everyone will tell you, yes, she was a free spirit. And before she had the kids, she was, you know, motorcycle, she was rock and roll, she was drugs. She got herself out of that lifestyle once she had Buffy and had Ricky.
Everybody tells me she's gone, but I don't feel it. And it's I just want people to help. If I could remember even a street name or something to help more with, I would. But I can't remember anything, and that's what kills me the most. I guess I'd come back from school one day, and I really don't remember that day very well. But all I knew is that I had to go over to my friend's house, and I was supposed to wait there until she came back. She told me she was going to be there for a few days. Or that I was going to be there for a few days because grandma needed her. But she never came home, and I would really like to find that family because they knew my mom. And they took us in until my brother got sick, and I wish I did. I can't remember. I'm the only one that remembers, and I can't remember anything. No, but I feel like there's a clue or something in there that could help. I kind of remember the school I went to. I remember a few houses that I recognized, but it's not enough. And I don't know how to bring all that up. You know, I don't know what I can do to help.
That brings us to the end of episode 250. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Illinois. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.